Rock.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today's narration is the 17th and final part of Geoffrey of Monmouth's The History of the Kings of Britain. And today's episode is called Cadwallader Abandons Britain. In the meantime, while Cadwallo was spending the winter with Salomon, they plotted together that Brian should cross over to Britain and find some way or other of killing King Edwin's magician to prevent him from warning the king of Cadwallo's coming, as he had been doing so regularly. Brian landed at Southampton and disguised himself as a beggar by putting on the clothes of some poor wretch. He forged an iron rod for himself, with a point at the end. With this, he intended to kill the magician, if only he should chance to meet him. Then he set out for York, where Edwin was living at that time. Once Brian had entered the city, he joined the throng of beggars who were waiting for alms outside the king's door. As he was walking up and down, his own sister came out of the hall, holding a basin in her hand, for she was fetching water for the queen. Edwin had carried this girl off from the city of Worcester when he was raging through the lands held by the Britons after Cadwallo's flight. As she passed in front of Brian, he immediately recognised her. He called to her in a low voice, bursting into tears as he did so. The girl turned her face as he spoke, not being sure who it was. As she came nearer, she recognised her brother and almost fainted away, for she was terrified that he would be recognised by some mischance and so be seized by the enemy. They dispensed with kisses and words of endearment for the time being, while she explained to her brother, as briefly as she could, the layout of the court, just as if she were speaking of something else, and then pointed out the magician whom her brother was looking for at that very moment, by some coincidence, he was walking about among the beggars while alms were being distributed to them. As soon as Brian had made a note of the man's appearance, he told his sister to steal secretly out of the queen's apartments the very next night, and so come to join him outside the town, near a certain old church, where he would await her coming in the crypts under the building. Brian then went off to mingle with the crowd of beggars, moving towards the spot where Pelletus was marshalling them. As soon as he had a chance of dealing Pelletus a blow, he did not waste a moment. He lifted up the pilgrim's staff, which I have described, and stabbed Pelletus in the chest with a blow which killed him on the spot. He immediately dropped his rod, slipped away through the crowd without anyone suspecting him, and by God's grace made his way to the hiding place. When night fell, his sister tried to escape by every way she could think of, but she was not successful. Edwin, who was terrified by the death of Pelletus, had posted guards all around his court to pry into every hidden corner, and these guards blocked every exit against her. As soon as Brian discovered this, he left York and went to Exeter. There he summoned the Britons to meet him and told them what he had done. Next, he sent messages off to Cadwallo. Then he garrisoned the city of Exeter and announced to all the leaders of the Britons that they must take steps to see to the defences of their castles and cities, and then settle down patiently to await Cadwallo's coming. For in a short while, with Salomon to support him, he would arrive to organise their defence. This soon became known up and down the whole island. Pendar, the king of the Mercians, then marched on Exeter with a vast horde of Saxons and proceeded to besiege Brian there. While this was going on, Cadwallo made a landing with 10,000 soldiers who had been put under his command by Salomon. He marched immediately to the siege, which his captain, about whom I have told you, was withstanding. As he came within sight of the town, he divided his troops into four squadrons and then lost no time in attacking his enemies. When the battle began, King Pendar was immediately captured and his army annihilated. When Pendar saw that he had no other means of safety, He surrendered to Cadwallo, gave hostages, and promised to attack the Saxons at Cadwallo's side. With Pendar beaten, Cadwallo assembled his nobles, who had been dispersed so long, and marched against Edwin in the direction of Northumbria, ravaging the country as he went. This was reported to Edwin. He made a treaty with the petty kinglets of the Angles, marched out to meet Cadwallo in a field called Headfield, and there joined battle with the Britons. The fighting was quickly over. Edwin was killed, and so were almost all the people he had under command, and his son Offred, together with Godbold, king of the Orkneys, who had come to help them. Once he had won this victory, Cadwallo marched through all the provinces held by the Angles and wrought great havoc on the Saxons. He was so determined to wipe out the entire race of Angles who were in the lands of Britain that he refused to spare the womenfolk or even their little ones of tender age. He inflicted hideous tortures on all whom he found. Next, he fought a battle against Offric, who had succeeded Edwin, killing him and his two nephews, who were to have reigned after him, together with Eadan, the king of the Scots, who had come to their assistance. With all these killed, Oswald succeeded to the kingship of Northumbria. Cadwallo attacked him in his turn, once he had dealt with the others, and chased him from district to district until he came to the wall which the Emperor Severus had built years before between Britain and Scotland. Then he sent Pendar, the king of the Mercians, and the greater part of Pendar's army to that spot with orders to join battle with Oswald. One night, when Oswald was besieged by this Pendar in a place called Heavenfield, that is, the Field of Heaven, he set up Christ's cross there and told his troops to shout out the following words at the top of their voices. Let us all kneel down and pray together to the one true and all-powerful God, so that he may deliver us from the arrogant army of the British king and of his wicked commander, Pendar. I know full well that we have undertaken this righteous war for the safety of our own people. They all did as he had ordered. At first light, they marched forth against the enemy and were rewarded for their faith by winning a victory. When this was announced to Cadwallo, he blazed out in bitter anger. He assembled his own army and went in pursuit of the holy King Oswald. A battle was fought in a place called Burn, and there Pendar attacked Oswald and killed him. Once Oswald was dead, and many of his men with him, his brother Oswy succeeding him in the kingship of the Northumbrians. Oswy gave many gifts of gold and silver to Cadwallo, who was now in command of all Britain, and did homage to him. In this way, he gained peace. Soon after this, Oswy's son, Alfred, and Oidwald, the son of Oswy's brother, led a revolt against him. However, they were not strong enough to resist him, and they fled to Pendar, king of the Mercians. They implored Pendar to collect an army and to cross the Humber with them in an attempt to deprive King Oswy of his throne. Pendar was afraid to break the peace which King Cadwallo had established throughout the Kingdom of Britain. He therefore put off launching an attacking expedition without Cadwallo's permission until such moment as he could persuade the king to march in person against King Oswy, or to grant permission to Pendar himself to fight against that king. At a certain Whitsuntide court, when King Cadwallo was celebrating the feast in wearing the crown of Britain, and all the British leaders and all the kings of the Angles were present, except only Oswy, Pendar therefore went up to the king and asked if Oswy alone had absented himself, seeing that all the other Saxon princes were there. Cadwallo told Pendar that Oswy was absent because he was ill. Pendar said in reply that Oswy had sent to Germany for some Saxons so that he could take vengeance on them both for his brother Oswald's death. He added, moreover, that it was Oswy who had broken the peace of the kingdom, for it was he, and he alone, who had started the war between them, when he had attacked his own son Alfred and Oidwald, the son of his brother, and driven them out of their own homeland. Pendar therefore asked permission either to kill Oswy or to expel him from his kingdom. The king could not make his mind up about this. He called for him to state what they thought should be done in such circumstances. They each gave their advice. Among the rest, Margadud, king of the Domitiae, spoke. "My lord," he said, "seeing that you have always intended to drive the entire race of Angles out of the land of Britain, why are you now changing your mind and permitting these men to remain in peace among us? At least you should give your approval when they want to fight among themselves and knock each other about, so that in the end they may be exterminated from our country. There can be no question of keeping faith with one whose every action is a treacherous attempt to catch in the snares which he has laid the man to whom he himself owes loyalty. From the moment when they first came to our homeland, these Saxons have never stopped their treachery, and they have constantly betrayed our people. Why, then, should we keep faith with them? Give Pendar permission to attack this Aussie about a war between the two of them, so that one can kill the other, and in this way our island will be free of them." Cadwallo was influenced by this speech and by what the others said. He gave Pendar permission to fight with Aussie. Pendar then collected together a huge army and crossed the Humber. He launched a bitter attack against King Aussie and devastated the various districts of his country. Aussie, who was reduced in the end by sheer necessity, promised Pendar innumerable royal decorations and more presents than anyone could ever imagine, if only he would stop destroying his country, put an end to the invasion, and go back home. Pendar refused point blank to yield to Aussie's entreaties. King Aussie then put his trust in God's help and joined battle with Pendar on the bank of the river Winnet, although he himself had a smaller army. Pendar and 30 of his leaders were killed, and Aussie won a victory. Once Pendar had met his end, his son Wulfred succeeded him in the kingship, this with Cadwallo's approval. Wulfred made an alliance with two leaders of the Mercians called Eber and Edbert, and then declared war once more on Aussie. In the end, however, Cadwallo ordered Wulfred to make peace with Aussie. Finally, after 48 years, Cadwallo, this most noble and most powerful king of the Britons, became infirm with old age and illness, departed this life on the 15th day after the calends of December. The Britons embalmed his body with balsam and aromatic herbs and placed it inside a bronze statue, which, with extraordinary skill, they had cast to the exact measure of his stature. They mounted this statue, fully armed, on a bronze horse of striking beauty, and erected it on top of the West Gate of London, in memory of the victory of which I have told you, and as a source of terror to the Saxons. Underneath, they built a church in honour of St. Martin, and there divine services are celebrated for Cadwallo himself, and for others who die in the faith. Cadwalder, the son of Cadwallo, succeeded his father in the government of the realm. This was the youth whom Bede called Cleared Valour. At first, he ruled the kingdom bravely and peacefully, but 12 years after he had inherited the crown, he fell ill, and civil war broke out among the Britons. Cadwalder's mother had been the sister of Pendar, but only on her father's side, for she had had a different mother, a woman born from a noble family of the Gerisae. The famous King Cadwallo had taken her to his bed later in life, after the treaty which he had made with her brother, and by her he had become the father of Cadwalder. When Cadwalder fell ill, as I had begun to tell you, the Britons started to quarrel among themselves and to destroy the economy of their homeland by an appalling civil war. There then followed a second disaster, for a grievous and long-remembered famine afflicted the besotted population, and the countryside no longer produced any food at all for human sustenance, always excepting what the huntsman's skill could provide. A pestilent and deadly plague followed this famine, and killed off such a vast number of the population that the living could not bury them. The few wretches left alive gathered themselves into bands and emigrated to countries across the sea. standing beneath the corded sails, they raised their voices in lamentation. "Thou hast given us, O God," they shouted, "like sheep for meat, and hast scattered us among the heathen." King Cadwallader himself, sailing off to Brittany with his miserable fleet, made his own contribution to this lamentation. "Woe unto us sinners," he cried, "for our monstrous crimes, with which we never stopped offending God, as long as we had the time for repentance. The vengeance of his might lies heavily upon us, even to the point of uprooting us from our native soil, we whom the Romans long ago, the Scots, the Picts, and the Saxons in their cunning treachery were unable to exterminate. The fact that we have so often rescued our fatherland from these people now avails us nothing, for it is not God's will that we should rule there for all time. When he, the true judge, saw that we had no intention of putting an end to our crimes, and that all the same no one could drive our people out of the kingdom, he made up his mind to punish us for our folly. He has visited his wrath upon us, and as a result of this, we have emigrated from our homeland in vast crowds. Come back, you Romans, return, Scots and Picts, and you too, Ambrones and Saxons. The door to Britain now lies wide open before you. The island which you could never capture stands empty now through the wrath of God. It is not your valour which is forcing us to leave, but the power of the Supreme King, whom we have never ceased to provoke." Cadwallader went on lamenting in this way until the time came to land on the shore of Brittany, when he appeared with all his company before King Alan, the nephew of he was received by him with all honour. For 11 years, Britain remained deserted by all its inhabitants, except for a few whom death had spared in certain parts of Wales. Even the Britons had come to hate their island, and it had no attraction for the Saxons at this time, for they too kept dying there, one after the other. However, once the deathly plague had ceased its ravages, those few Saxons who remained alive continued their age-old custom and sent a message to their fellow countrymen in Germany to tell them that the island had been abandoned by its native population and would fall into their hands without any difficulty at all if only they would journey over to occupy it. As soon as this news reached them, the odious race gathered a vast horde of its men and women together. They landed in parts of Northumbria and occupied the wastelands from Albany to Cornwall. There was no local inhabitant left alive to stop them, except for a few little pockets of Britons who had stayed behind, living precariously in Wales, in the remote recesses of the woods. From that time on, the power of the Britons came to an end in the islands, and the Angles began to reign. Some little time passed. The British people gathered its strength once more, and Cadwallader began again to turn his mind to his own kingdom, which by now was purged from the plague. He asked Alan to help him to return to the position of power which he formerly held. The king granted him his wish. However, just as Cadwallader was preparing his fleet, an angelic voice spoke to him in a peal of thunder and told him to stop. God did not wish the Britons to rule in Britain any more, until the moment should come which Merlin had prophesied to Arthur. The voice ordered Cadwallader to go to Rome and visit Pope Sergius. There he should do penance, and he would be numbered among the blessed. What is more, the voice added that as a reward for its faithfulness, the British people would occupy the islands again at some time in the future, once the appointed moment should come. This, however, could not be before the relics which once belonged to the Britons had been taken over again, and they had transported them from Rome to Britain. Only when they had on show again the relics of all their other saints, which had been hidden away because of the pagan invasion, would they reoccupy their lost kingdom. When this message reached the ears of this God-fearing prince, he went immediately to Allan and told the king what had been revealed to him. Allan thereupon took a number of books, such as the one about the auguries of the eagle, which had prophesied at Shaftesbury, and those on the oracular sayings of the Sibyl and of Merlin. He began to read everything in these books to see if the revelation made to Cadwallader agreed with the written oracles. When he found that they all did agree, he suggested to Cadwallader that he should obey God's order by postponing his plan for Britain and accepting the advice which the angel had given him. Allan encouraged Cadwallader to send his son Ivor and his nephew Inni to the island to rule over what remained of the Britons, lest the folk descended from this ancient race should lose their freedom because of the barbarian invasions. Cadwallader then renounced worldly preoccupations for the sake of God and his everlasting kingdom. He journeyed to Rome and was confirmed by Pope Sergius. He was then attacked by a sudden illness, and in the 689th year after our Lord's incarnation, on the 12th day of the calends of May, he was released from the corruption of the flesh, and so entered the hall of the kingdom of heaven. Ivor and Inni collected some ships together. They raised all the men they could, and made a landing on the island. For 79 years they harassed the English people with their savage attacks, but little good did it do them. Indeed, the plague about which I have told you, the famine, and their own inveterate habit of civil discord had caused this proud people to degenerate so much that they were no longer able to keep their foes at bay. As the foreign element around them became more and more powerful, they were given the name of Welsh instead of Britons, this word deriving either from their leader Gwelo, or from their queen Galles, or else from their being so barbarous. The Saxons, on the other hand, behaved more wisely. They kept peace and concord among themselves. They cultivated the fields, and they rebuilt the cities and castles. They threw off completely the dominion of the Britons, and under their leader Æthelstan, who was the first among them to be crowned king, they ruled over the whole of Logria.